Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Carlos Collazo, another of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast deep dive. Today, it's everything about the Cleveland Guardians, an organization that continues to stay basically a competitive playoff contender seemingly year after year, even though we're going to talk about a player who was the number one pick in the draft not that long ago. It's an interesting combo that they managed to win the lottery and then be right back in playoff contention again. It's a lot of, it's a deep system too. We're going to be talking about that here as well. And we're just going to jump right in. Great to see you, Carlos. When you look at this Guardian system, it feels like we talked about the depth here, but it also does feel like that we saw Chase DeLauter make his big league debut in the postseason.
Yeah.
This is an organization that has some guys who should be able to help this year a little bit, like, or in one way or another, whether that's in coming up to the big league club or potentially being packaged in trades. I feel like that this is an organization that's kind of had to do that pretty regularly here because they've had kind of these runs where it's like, okay, you got to pick a shortstop out of this group. You got to pick a middle infielder. You got to pick an outfielder or a pitcher. Like, where do you see kind of the overall state of the system?
Yeah, I think it's one of the better systems in the game. It's very well-rounded. It is not super slanted towards hitters or pitchers. There's a good collection of both. There is a great combination of near proximity players who you would expect to help the team out as soon as 2026. A few of their guys have already helped out the big league team. You mentioned Chase DeLauter debuting in the postseason, which was just cool to see in general. Parker Messick was super key into helping get the Guardians into the postseason at all with how he pitched down the stretch. So he's right there and ready to go. I think you also see a greater diversity of offensive profiles in this system than you have in the past. For years, I feel like you could basically chalk up every left-handed hitting, contact-oriented, slappy offensive player. And you look at the Guardians lineup and it feels like for years they've been trying to just get more power into that lineup and avoid being this like station to station. You need to string together a couple hits before you can score a run sort of team. I feel like there is this blend of offensive. You've got power hitters like Ralphy Velazquez and huge raw power and Chase Laviolette, who they just drafted. You've got the more contact oriented, really advanced pure hitter types like Travis Bazzana at the top of the system, Angel Hanau, Cooper Engel. So I think there's just a great variety of profile. There's balance, there's depth. It's very rare that you finish a 30 and you think, man, like, there are all these guys I couldn't fit on, but I wanted to. That was the case for me when I was writing up this Guardians list.
You hit on one thing that I've loved writing about last year, which is just finding how much more left-handed hitting and switch hitting. The Guardians have no seemingly interest in right-handed hitters. Gabriel Arias is the only right-handed hitter projected to be in their everyday lineup. And then when you just start going down the list of guys who are coming up, most of them also bat left-handed or switch hit. They do have like an Austin Hedges and Jonathan Rodriguez could be on their benches, right-handed bats. But let's just say that Austin Hedges is not on the bat he's not on your bench because of his ability to bat right-handed. It's much more about the defense and all that. Speaking of, the number one prospect is Travis Bazzana, who does bat left-handed, which again fits very much in the Guardians profile here. I would say with Bazzana, clearly their number one prospect, the guy that, you know, was basically considered one of the top prospects, obviously, in the draft just now a year and a half ago. But coming off of that season he had, I feel like that it was not a particularly, like, a surface level stats, it was not a particularly impressive season. But then when you look at it kind of like there, it also, if you look at it though, and you look at kind of the underlying analytical data and all, there's nothing that really jumps out of it that's really scary either. Like, you could maybe want to see a little bit more out of it, but it also wasn't something where it's like, oh, well, this is a clear, glaring flaw that he's now going to have to fix. How do you kind of perceive it?
I view it very similar to that. He did not have the sort of season that JJ Weatherholt had, who was in his draft class. He hasn't had the sort of performance that we've seen from Nick Kurtz, who is another member of that just highly regarded college hitting class at the top. But he also dealt with injury that limited him this year, so that's definitely a factor. And I think there were some mechanical things that he had to clean up coming back from that injury that we saw him really address and solve for at the end of the year. And as you said, if you look at the underlying sort of batted ball data that we have, he's the same hitter I expect him to be and think he'll be moving forward. Like, the contact skills haven't gone anywhere. He's still impacting the baseball at a solid clip, especially in the second half of the season. I think you saw him turning on the ball and getting in the air with more frequency. And so my overall assumptions about who Travis Bezzana is as a player, they haven't gone anywhere. It's mostly a case of, okay, now we want to get him a fully healthy season and actually go see him perform like we think we can, or we think he can. Excuse me, but I think he's still one of the better hitting prospects in baseball and a guy that I would expect to move quickly. If he had a big role on the Guardians team this year, it wouldn't shock me, although the Guardians don't tend to be one of the more aggressive teams in promoting their players. So I am kind of curious, like, how much seasoning are they going to let him have in the minor leagues? Because I think if they want to move him quickly and if he's healthy, it wouldn't shock me at all if he's ready for just consistent big league time.
What did you, coming out of the season, what did you get reports defensively? Like, how does he look at second? Does that look like that's, you know, probably the best fit for him long-term? Or how do you kind of see him kind of shaking out defensively? Well, and I partly bring that up just because this is the Guardians. You could be a solid defensive second baseman. And it's like, hey, maybe we move you somewhere else, because we only got about 11 of these guys, it feels like, you know, bouncing around.
Yeah. I think there is still a hole for them at second base. I mean, the fact that Juan Brito maybe had a chance last year and didn't really grab that job just made it a little bit more likely that it kind of is Travis Bezzana's job to take. And I think there is some logic and some sense to, okay, Travis Bezzana was the number one overall pick. He's very, very clearly a valuable player on the team. Maybe the path of least resistance for Bezzana is just putting him at second base and letting him play there. And if he's a fringy defender, he's probably going to hit enough to make up for that. Just get his bat in the lineup. You need some more firepower in the lineup. Put him there. That's where he can play. And you don't think about it too much. But I also just know that Travis Bezzana is a great runner and he's a great athlete. And if the team wanted to experiment with him playing another position like center field, that would be intriguing to me. Now, I haven't heard they're definitely going to do that or anything. And I would be a little bit surprised, because I do think there are a lot of outfielders that are vying for playing time and spots. And depending on like where Chase DeLauder is playing, if he's on the field, if he's playing center field, like that's interesting to me as well. But I think, no, go ahead.
I like the idea though. If you said like, if Bezzana could play center, Juan, Bezzana, DeLauder, that probably like that could end up being that their best outfield. I mean, I could see that scenario.
Yeah.
That could all of a sudden become pretty interesting.
That would be interesting. But I think in terms of like how we're viewing him as a defender at second base, I think like best case scenario is he becomes a solid defender, like a reliable, if not flashy sort of defender. His arm is not an issue at second base. He throws from a weird slot, but I've only heard positive things about like the development of his throwing arm and the versatility of his arm angles there. So I don't think the profile has changed significantly from what we expected it to be a year ago defensively.
We mentioned DeLauder. DeLauder was, I don't think there was really any much consideration of DeLauder being number one on this list ahead of Bezzana, especially, let's just acknowledge, really what we're hoping for Chase DeLauder more than anything is a season where Chase DeLauder shows up to spring training healthy and ends the season still healthy. Because that has been something that has been, it's been a, just a, I wouldn't even say a series, it's been a long running lower like foot injury issue that has taken multiple years of trying to get that right. And then when he gets on the field, everything looks good. And then you're just crossing your fingers that he's not going to end up on the IL not that long after. Is the lost development time, has that, you, do you have a worry that that might impact him as he hits the big leagues here? Or is the bat really look like it's still polished enough that is made up for the fact that he's really kind of had to develop in fits and starts?
Yeah, I have no questions at all about the bat with Chase DeLauder. The injuries are questions to me because like we just haven't had any example of him being durable over a full season. So like, is that ever going to be the case for him? Like you said, he's had a lot of lower body injuries, foot injuries that have plagued him. He had core surgery. He had a right wrist surgery. So he's just been very injury prone for the entirety of his career prior to getting into the Guardian system. I mean, he was injured for most of the year, his draft year, which is part of the reason why he even slipped to the Guardians and was available for them to pick him. Where that impacts like how I'm viewing him or thoughts on upside is I think there's probably less of a chance that he's going to play center field long-term just because that position is more demanding on the body. And so it would make a lot of sense if the Guardians just put him into a corner maybe quicker than they otherwise would have if he was healthy. At this point, I think the Guardians just need to find a way to get DeLotter's bat in the lineup and get him on the field regularly. If that's rotating through like a corner outfield spot and even DH, I think that could be worth it because his bat is superb. If we didn't have these health questions with Chase DeLotter, I think there's no question he would be the top prospect in the system. And I think we'd be talking about a potentially top 20, top 15 prospect in the game. I mean, his performance when he's on the field is exceptional. He hits the ball incredibly hard. He doesn't miss hardly at all. He makes the right swing decisions. He's hitting the ball at ideal angles. It's like check, 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 check for everything you want to see for a hitter. It's just he needs to get on the field and let that performance actually come, because the hitting traits dating back to his college years have been absolutely tremendous.
When you look at this organization as a whole, it feels like it's kind of taken another step forward from where it was a solid system last year, but does it feel better this year, or what, how do you kind of perceive it?
I think that it feels very static from a year ago. The depth is still really good, but this past year, the Guardians really dealt with a lot of injuries for a lot of their players. So I think you could, if you wanted to ding this Guardian system, you could maybe say that, like, if you're one of the lower people on Travis Bezzana because his injured season scares you, or you just haven't seen it as much. I think there are a number of players in this system that I maybe would have expected to rank more confidently in the top 25 on our top 100 a year ago. The step back that Jason Chorio had, we were talking about him as a no-brainer top 50 prospect. If he hits for a little more power, what's he going to be looking like? He's much further down the list. I think the people who like Travis Bezzana for him coming out of the draft probably would have expected to be talking about Travis Bezzana right now, how we're talking about J.J. Weatherholt. And J.J. Weatherholt is currently a top five prospect in baseball for us. I think Ralphie Velasquez is a guy who maybe you just want to see him have better numbers because he is like a first baseman and the threshold for that is really high. And so you add in guys like Wellman Francesa who've taken steps backwards, Juan Brito, and maybe you could say that like we didn't quite hit on all the players that we were really excited about a year from now. But that said, I still quite like a lot of these players. There are a number of players who are no doubt top 100 types. There are a lot of guys that didn't make the top 100 that are just off the list. And there are players that I couldn't get into the top 10 that like I really wanted to get inside that. So I think it's incredibly deep. And for me, the only real questions I have with the Guardian system is just health. There are so many players that just had bad health years. If they can all stay healthy, there's plenty of talent here.
It's funny when you say that, like as far as guys who... There are so many guys on this list outside of their top group, that top 100 group. Like, obviously, Jace LaViolette, we want to see, you know, he had a very poor season last year. Let's just be clear. But that said, to get them where they got him, he was a guy who, even if you say, okay, in hindsight, maybe number one would have been a little rich for him, even if he had a good year. He was a clear top five prospect coming into the class, even at the worst case scenario.
I mean, entering the year, he was in the number one spot on our draft board, number one player in the country, just freakish set of athleticism, power, speed for his size. There are some Chase DeLotter shades here, just with the pure athlete and the way that the Guardians were able to acquire him because he had an injured season and a down year. That said, Chase DeLotter's hit tool is far more advanced than Jace's. And that's the big question with Jace. I'm also fascinated by the Jace LaViolette selection because in some ways the Guardians draft in 2025 kind of reset my expectations for what this org is doing. We talked about
develop power has always been seemingly the approach. And Jace LaViolette is the opposite of develop power.
And then they doubled down later when they took Nolan Schubart later in the draft, who is a very similar profile. It's all power. It's a lot of walks, but they're real contact questions. So whether the Guardians now think that they can do the inverse of that, or whether it's just, hey, we need more power and this is how we're going to get it. I'll be very curious to see like if that changes the hitters they target moving forward. Jace is an X factor here because if he comes out and he's just looking fully healthy and he's not having any issues translating that power to wood bats and to professional pitching, like his upside is tremendous. He could easily jump onto the top 100 with great production. And I feel like you could say that about, I don't know, six other players in this Guardians list who are not on our 100 right now.
I mean, Joey Oki's not in your top 10, and I could see like a scenario where Joey Oki pops.
Joey Oki it feels like he is everyone's favorite pick to click guy on our staff at this point, because he's a tremendous athlete. The fastball traits and characteristics are exceptional. He releases the ball from a below average release height, which is a good thing with how this pitch plays. He gets a ton of arm side run on the pitch. He actually got better as the season progressed and began throwing harder and holding his velocity better deeper into games. His slider was a banger breaking ball prior to being drafted and had this great combination of power and movement, and we still view that as a plus pitch. I think Joey Oakey's pure stuff is better than Braylon Doty, who we have ranked number 6 right now and is on the top 100. Doty is just far more advanced in terms of control and command. Like his command is exceptional. Maybe we can get into him. But yeah, if Joey Oakey continues to make strides with his control and command, he will very quickly be on this top 100 list and just has awesome upside potential. So there's a lot of players we can get into here, JJ. Wherever you want to go, I'm happy to go.
Well, okay, so let's put it this way. Let's assume Bezzana does graduate this year, which no guarantee, but as we just laid out, like, this is the guy. If he doesn't, it'll be a slow path. Even the Guardians are moved guys slower, but it'll be a slow path for a polished bat from a 2024 draft class, where we've already seen Nick Kurtz win Rookie of the Year. We already seen JJ Weatherholt. We expect to be an everyday regular. Like the other guys at the top of that class, most of them are graduate. Let's assume for these purposes that Brazan is going to graduate. Let's assume that Chase DeLauder is going to graduate, which he's already made his major league debut. That doesn't seem crazy. If that happens, who's the guess to be the number one next year?
Yeah, I guess it would be conversation of like three players. Ralphie Velasquez, who we have ranked number 3. Angel Hanau, who we have ranked number 4. And then Braylon Doty, who we have ranked number 6. Doty was the one player that I even still wonder, should I have ranked him a little bit higher? I ranked him behind Parker Messick in part because, like, Parker Messick is a now big league starter who pitched, I think he pitched better than like what his stuff and what his role ultimately will be. But there's a lot of value in a solid number 4 arm that you can rely on. And very clearly he helped them get to the postseason. But Braylon Doty is certainly a lot more exciting to dream on. So I think those are the three. Like, I could see a case where Ralphie Velasquez, who has a little bit more upper minors performance and experience, actually gets an opportunity at the big leagues. So much of this is just like uncertainty about how quickly the Guardians are going to push players. And they have a number of these first base types that maybe he's just going to be blocked for this year. But Ralphie Velasquez maybe has the best hit power combination in the class. It's basically a conversation of him versus, not in the class, but in the Guardian system. It's a conversation between Travis Bezzana and Chase DeLauder. I think in terms of raw power, Ralphie Velasquez is definitely up there. He absolutely pulverizes the baseball. He's improved his angles. He actually strikes out, I think, less frequently than you might expect. I hear just nothing but constant praise for how Ralphie is able to conduct himself in the batter's box. I don't have any worry about his hit power combination profiling at first base. He can maybe move around a little bit in the corner outfield, but I think you're going to want to put him at first base and just improve as a defender there. And then Angel Hanau, who we haven't even talked about much, he's another player who lost some time. He dealt with a right shoulder sprain in spring training, and so that kind of cost him a decent amount of time. But he was a player who we were just praising for his pure hitting chops a year ago, and I think there's every reason to think that he's going to come back healthy and just look more like the prospect he was last year. And he's a very well-rounded prospect in terms of the tools he has. It's a big arm. It's one of the better arms in the system. Where he plays defensively, I think, might depend more on like who's around him than anything he's doing. He needs some more refinement as a defender, but he's got a chance to play short, second, third base, and bring an above average hit tool. So those two hitters and then Braylon Doty would be in the conversation for me. I think I might just go on a limb and say Doty, because I think the command traits he has are exceptional and really rare.
Okay. I do want to ask before we get to what the good organ is good at developing. We talked about the injuries. I feel like that we need to, like, was Daniel Espino one of the toughest guys to rank, like where you want to put him in a 30 of anyone you can think of that you've ever ranked?
Yeah, this has been the case for 2 years for Daniel Espino, because last year we had like no real information to go off of. This year, He actually got on the mound late in 2025. He had one AAA appearance. He appeared in the fall league and the stuff was back. It looked great. It was awesome to just see him on the mound. But yeah, I think this is the most volatile profile. Like, I think Daniel still wants to start, and the Guardians should give him every opportunity to prove that he can't start before they just put him in the bullpen and just say, go throw this fastball, throw the slider as much as you can, and we'll get what we can out of you. But the way Guardians officials talk about Daniel Espino and how hard he's worked and the sort of character that he has and his makeup, he's just hard to not root for, to be honest. I mean, he's gone through so many injuries. He's gone through some off the field hardships this past year. I mean, multiple shoulder surgeries, knee injuries. And when he was healthy prior to a lot of these injuries, we're talking about him in like the same way that we've been talking about Bubba Chandler and Nolan McClain and Andrew Painter this offseason. Like, he looked like one of the best pitching prospects in baseball, and he clearly still has that stuff. And so you see a guy like this sitting at 17, it feels like it's crazy low. It's just, there's so much uncertainty. It's really hard. You could argue him 10 spots higher, 10 spots lower. And I don't think there's really a wrong place for him because of that. So I don't know, JJ, where would you have him?
I just love that we keep ranking these guys, right? Because we saw it with Espino, right? Which is, you could obviously argue that when he's that hurt for that long, that you just say, okay, put him off the list until he comes back. And now you put him back on. But Daniel Espino, there's a reason that the Guardians put him on their 40-man roster, is that you don't want a quick guy like this. And when you talk about him starting versus relieving, the crazy thing is he hasn't used an option yet. Because if you're on the IL the whole year, you're never optioned. So while it may feel like that the timetable is really speeding up, it actually isn't. He could spend all this year as a starter optioned to the minors, and you could go into next year. And if you say, okay, well, we're moving him to the pen, if he stays healthy, you still have multiple options. He would be valuable as a reliever with multiple options. Or if he has gotten back to 80% of what he was pre-injury, watch out. I mean, it's kind of a fascinating guy that way. That's, as you said, this is an organization that had a lot of injuries. It's had a lot of injuries. But what are they good at developing?
I think the Guardians are a solid development team across the board, really. I think pitching is maybe what stands out the most, because I think most of their impactful players, well, it's hard for the Guardians because they spend so infrequently that their roster is always very homegrown. It's hard to not have a homegrown roster if you're not spending money. You're just reliant on what your farm system produces. But the fact that they are as homegrown as they are, and they've been as competitive as consistently, tells you they're doing something right. And so part of that is they've just been good across the board. But you look at their rotation, Gavin Williams, Tanner Bibee, Logan Allen, all homegrown guys. You look at Cade Smith in the back of their bullpen. He's become one of the best relief pitchers in baseball the last 2 years. He was an NDFA. I think they do a good job of identifying pitchers who can throw strikes and command the ball, and they've been pretty good at helping those pitchers add a little bit more stuff. But it's also true that they've taken players with the inverse. Like, Gavin Williams was not this pitchability type when he was coming out of college, out of ECU. They took him in the first round, and he's shown a lot better control and command than I think you would expect for him at times throughout. So I probably think of the Guardians still more as a better pitching development organization. I also think they've done a pretty good job developing catcher defense. Like, this is with Bo Naylor on the team now. There were big questions about whether or not he was going to catch enough to just stick at the position when he was in high school, and he very quickly became a much better receiver. We haven't talked about Jacob Cozart at all on this podcast.
Or Cooper Engle,
who, I think with Cooper Engle, this is kind of why I'm curious, like, how good really are the Guardians at developing catching? Because I think Cooper Engle is a player who maybe you would have wanted to see a little bit more improvement from him defensively, and that is kind of still a little bit of a knock on his game. So what they're going to be able to get out of him defensively next year, I think, will be key. But Jacob Cozart, he was already a really good defensive catcher when the Guardians drafted him. We viewed him as one of the top defensive catchers in the game. But, like, the reviews we're getting on him now for his defense are exceptional. I think for a player of his size, he doesn't look like one of these defensive savants at the position because he's just a lot bigger. But I do think he is one of the more exciting defensive catchers in the game. So that's an area that I think is interesting to me. So those two maybe to start out.
So that's going to wrap up the video portion of this. But on the podcast side, we're going to keep going right after this break. And by the way, if you want to hear all that, and we're going to talk about sleepers and more, check out the podcast feed if you're watching on YouTube. We'll be back right after this quick break. So, Carlos, now that we're back, we've talked about a couple of guys outside of the 10. This is a some organizations you get to kind of that natural demarcation line before 10, where you're like, okay, yep, I've ranked everyone I really like. That's easy to rank. Now I got to line it up, figure it out. This is an organization where that really kind of stretched, I would say, into the almost to the teens at least.
Oh, yeah.
So what are sleepers may even buy me the right word, but what are some guys outside of the 10 that jump out to you as other guys to kind of keep an eye on?
Okay, so we've mentioned Joey Oakey and we've mentioned Daniel Espino already, so I won't spend any more time on
and
that.
And you mentioned Cozart.
Yeah, I think those are no-brainer options. I'll make it the easiest and just start at number 11 with Juniker Caceres, because this is maybe the player I was most upset that I couldn't really get into the top 10. I talked about a couple players that I couldn't get into the top 10 of this system. Caceres is one. He was signed out of Venezuela for $300,000 in 2024. And I don't think he was ever viewed as one of the top end players in this international class, even among Guardian signees of the international class. Like, he was not the top player, but he was tremendous in the DSL initially. He moved stateside in 2025 and continued to look awesome. He had 270, 379, 410 over 70 games between the ACL and Lowy Lynchburg. And I think the polish of his approach, his contact ability, his plate skills, his power are all tremendously impressive to me. And I think even if this is not a player who I would expect to be a center field defender in the long run, I think he's definitely going to be a corner. Like, liking a corner outfielder who has just 30 games at the low A level as a 17-year-old feels like maybe a tough profile. But I like his hitting ability and his impact potential so much that, like, I'm kind of fully in on the offensive package here with Caceres. And so I think Guardians fans are very aware of how good he is. But if he was more of a breakout sort of hitter in the larger landscape of prospect, like fans or just the baseball universe, that wouldn't surprise me at all, because I just think it's a very well-rounded advanced offensive profile here. It's more average or fringy secondary tools, but I'm just very much in on the hit power combo here.
Okay, so that's a fascinating one. I do want to ask you about Dean Curley, because I feel like that he was one who, if we'd have said going into last year that, again, that I would say that one trait you could also say about this Guardians draft class was they were not scared of the guys who slid. Who slid. They're like, hey, this is a guy we didn't expect to be available at this spot. Yeah. Let's take him. They did that with Jace LaViolette. That's also very true of Dean Curley, right?
Yeah, Dean Curley, we were talking about him as a top 15 player in the class entering the year very early on. We were talking about him potentially moving inside the top 10. And then it feels like as conference play kind of got around, he just didn't take the step forward offensively that teams wanted. And then the defensive questions really ballooned. Like, there were a number of bad defensive plays. He started, I think, at shortstop, maybe optimistically for Tennessee. Then he moved to second base, which is kind of just a weird fit for him. And the throwing was just it was bad. There's no other way to put it. It was bad. But what's interesting with Curley is he actually has a plus throwing arm in terms of, like, the power he can put on the baseball is plus. I just think that he maybe didn't have the experience he needed to make the plays from the angles he was making them at second base. And I'm hopeful that I'll be curious to see where the Guardians play him. But I think this is a player that you probably just put at third base. All the throws you're going to be making there are from similar angles. The exchange is less of a big deal at third base. So just let the natural arm strength kind of take over. I think that's a position he has a lot more experience with, or has he at least looked good at in the past. And then you're really looking at a pretty well-rounded hitter. I mean, Curley is a guy who has shown solid patience and swing decisions. He's shown solid contact skills. He's shown power. I think you could be looking at like a 50-50 sort of hit power offensive profile. And if you can avoid the defensive lapses, that's a pretty valuable player. That again, if he has a good year and we don't notice any defensive hiccups, he's another guy who could be in the top 10 of this system. At some point, we don't have room in the top 10 for all these guys.
It is, when you say that, it is kind of interesting, but like, it's not crazy to think that everything cascaded on him in part, like you said. If you don't have a lot of, when we talk about shortstop, one of the key things you have to have at shortstop is it's not just a throwing arm, but it's throwing versatility, because you have all kind of arm slots that you have to throw from. If Dean Curley doesn't have that, and he tried to play shortstop, and then he got moved to second, and it was kind of all in his head.
Right.
A lot of what we saw last year could be something where it's like, we may just look back and say, okay, put him at a position, let him just stay there. This is not a guy you want to have playing five games that, you know, five different positions for five games in a week, it looks like. Mm-hmm. But just let him do what he can do well.
And maybe interesting. And maybe that will come with just some more confidence. But I do think there's a lot of truth to things kind of snowballing on you defensively. And once you have some throwing errors, you're constantly thinking about that when you're getting rid of the ball. And so it tends to compound. I just think that he was put in a position that he maybe shouldn't have been put in ultimately. And I think he has the defensive tools to be a fine defender at third base.
Once the act that has been just natural and something that you try to do without ever thinking becomes something you're thinking about every time, right, and becomes conscious instead of subconscious, it's very
a bad spot to be. Yeah. It's a bad thing. Is true of hitters, the same can be true of defenders. Yeah.
Yeah. The harder the easier you can make it, the easier it is, the harder it becomes, the harder that it just snowballs. But okay. Before we got off sleepers, I did want to ask you, like, there's also a couple guys here who have been a little higher on this list at sometimes, like, or in past years or whatever. And then I feel like a lot of this is just because of the depth of the system has kind of moved guys down. You mentioned like Juan Brito is a guy who I would say, like, I'm going to throw a buffet out there of Juan Brito or Khalil Watson or Josh Hartle, Petey Halpin, guys like that, Doug Nikhazy, like, who jumps out to you as someone where it's like, you know what? Yes, he's lower on this list, but don't forget about this guy.
Yeah, Brito was a guy I really liked a year ago, and I think he just had a bad season, dealt with some injuries, so I still like him a decent bit. But the one name you mentioned that I think is maybe the most fascinating here is Khalil Watson. He's had a really interesting path. I mean, in his draft class in 2021, we were talking about him as one of the elite shortstop prospects in his class. He slid a little bit to the middle of the first round to the Marlins. Then he had some just suspension issues with them, got traded to the Guardians. And I think Khalil is coming off of what was maybe his best professional season in 2025, both on the field and off the field. He played outfield consistently for the first time in his career. He had obviously started his career as a shortstop. Then he played a few other positions in the infield. Looks like he actually has found a home in center field where he's pretty good. I mean, he's fast. He has an above average arm. I think just the burstiness could really suit him well in any outfield position. But he's also a player who got to solid power and he hit pretty well. I think this is not like you're always going to live with some strikeouts with Khalil Watson. He's never going to be an above average or a plus hitter, but I think he's enough to tap into above average raw power, maybe even plus raw power at the major league level to get to 18, 25 sort of home runs. And if you're doing that and you're playing center field, that's like quietly a really exciting player. I mean, it was 59 games in AA. It was 43 games in AAA. So just the overall performance in the upper levels and the overall offensive production he can provide, I think is exciting. Maybe like a bench type, platoon type, not sure exactly what the role will be. But he was added to the 40-man roster in November. And he brings some of the power that I think the Guardians are trying to find. So definitely a sneaky name to be aware of.
Well, when you looking ahead, obviously this is a team, we'll kind of wrap it up with this. This is an organization that, without spending much money at all at the big league level, a payroll that is microscopic in most years, still manages to figure out a way to contend. Does it feel like now, like when you look at it kind of big picture, that you know, Jose Ramirez has been re-upped again. We'll see Stephen Kwan is kind of, he is, I would say, the closest, the other thing they have to a star offensive player so far. And he's nearing the, you know, he's getting closer and closer to, you know, to kind of the end of his being under team control. Does it feel like that they're in the middle of their window right now to you, at the end of their window, at the kind of like in the front end of the window? Like, where do you kind of perceive where they are?
Well, yeah, if you're looking at their payroll, you would think they're in the middle of a rebuild and they're not planning to compete. I mean, their projected payroll right now is a bottom five mark in the league behind teams like the Nationals and the White Sox and the Cardinals. Like, I think the Guardians are kind of one of these outlier teams that kind of in the same Rays and Brewers camp where there's constantly competitive and that they have to try and win all these trades on the margins and they have to trade away players that a lot of other teams would try and lock up because they need to find ways to be competitive on a minuscule salary, clearly. And until there is an ownership group in Cleveland that is going to be more committed to actually either going outside the system to add some impact talent or just locking down more of the players that have left and gone to other teams. Like Francisco Lindor once played for this organization, if they were able to actually spend the money to keep him. We're talking about a lot of different like needs that the org has. So I would expect them to compete. I don't think they're a favorite for anyone entering the year, but they also just have a ton of reinforcements waiting in the wings here. They've got potential star players at the top of their farm system. They've got no shortage of reinforcements. And also they're in a division that has been easier than most to compete in because there are a lot of other teams in this division that haven't committed the same resources. Now, there are some teams that are willing to spend and also have really talented farm systems to compete with. Detroit looks great. The Kansas City Royals have been willing to spend a lot of money, actually. So there are some teams that are competing, and then there are teams like Minnesota where there's a lot more question marks about what's happening. So I think they're in the same window they've been in for years, really, where they're going to try and just stay competitive, sneak into the playoffs, and then you see what happens from there.
So that is our Cleveland Guardians deep dive. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope if you like this one, check out. We have deep dives now up for pretty much half of all 30 major league organizations. Don't worry. If we haven't done your team yet, and by the way, if we haven't done your team yet and you're to this point in the podcast, kudos to you. But we will be rolling out. We are rolling out four of these a week. So by the end of February, our goal is that we will have 30 deep dives up for all 30 organizations. For Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.